Dear Plugged In. You in on this? Toyota's versatile SUVs roll up their sleeves and take on tough jobs, dress up for a night out, or haul your family and friends with their spacious interiors. And they're available with some real sweet tech. Want a hybrid SUV? Oh yeah, they got those too. All with a slew of standard features so you won't break the bank. Get the juice at Toyota.com, folks.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
Into the DNVR Rockies podcast brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Now when you use promo code DNVR, new customers, you can make any $5 NBA pregame moneyline bet this week and get $150 in free bets if your team wins. That's with code DNVR only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. I am Patrick Lyons.
And I'm Susie Hunter. I have been on the East Coast for a couple of days now, and I forgot how this is the worst time zone to watch sports in.
It can be very challenging, unless you're overseas.
Football launched like midnight last night. It was ridiculous.
Yes, it does start here in Denver, pretty sure at 8:30 a.m., which is a weird time. There's a half-hour time difference, too, as you go west, which I know you know that.
No.
Yeah, we've got it pretty nice here. No doubt about it. We've got it pretty nice in the Rockies world because there's some positive news about Todd Helton's Hall of Fame candidacy, other little Rockies rumors here and there. The bulk of our show here in the middle segment, what can MLB learn from the World Cup? Maybe some things that they should be doing more of. Definitely some things they should not get involved in whatsoever and aren't, thankfully. And we'll celebrate Minor League Monday. But Susie, did you have a good time? Not only celebrating the birth of your nephew, but just Thanksgiving in general.
It was so good. I mean, I was in TV news for a long time, so you don't really get to see your family for holidays. So the fact that I'm able to like move this whole operation out to the East Coast for a week is like amazing. So I'm like, oh yeah, before the show, I was just like snuggling with my little nephew. It was adorable. Nice. I'm like, this is a great day.
That's awesome. What was the dessert situation like?
Ooh, okay. So anyone from the Philly area will know about Lynn Villa Orchard's pies. My sister brought the pies down from one of the best places to get a pie in the whole damn world. So we had pumpkin pie, we had pecan pie. My brother-in-law's nieces like made some like cheesecake thing. Like, oh, it was super cute.
There you go. That's nice. Yeah, that always, I always marvel at people who bring a homemade thing. I'm like, pumpkin pie? No, that's just something you can only buy in the store. Or apple pie, I've heard rumors that that is a thing that people make. But then you go cheesecake. Again, cheesecake, you got to just buy it from the store. So that's nice that you have some bakers there in the family.
Yeah. You know what? I also, the night before Thanksgiving, I got a pumpkin cheesecake from Cheesecake Factory. So like, I have just been on a tear.
A lot of cheese, a lot of cakes, a lot of pie.
Patrick.
Yes. No, I got plenty of miles in to try to potentially burn off all the calories. I don't know if I did well. We had four pies for seven people, so that was more than enough.
Run a marathon the next day?
I was planning on it, and then I was just a little too groggy, so I got in like 14 and change. But I did do 10 and a half the morning of Thanksgiving, so I was definitely in the positive there. So that was good.
That's like five turkey trots right there.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. According to the, one of the apps I use, like even my resting calories was like over 1,000. So So I had burned my day's calories off before for dinner, before Thanksgiving. Oh here's another big key one. I really do want to talk baseball today. But
I guess we can talk baseball on this baseball podcast.
But this is a critical thing, and I don't know, you know, if this causes a wedge in families. But what time is the goal time to start eating Thanksgiving? What is the time you start to eat? Because it varies. It varies for different families.
Yeah, I feel like earlier dinner time is like the way you're supposed to do it, because it's such a big meal. You need time to be awake and digest afterwards. But like, I don't want to start too early. For me, I think 3 o'clock is the perfect time.
Your opinion is actually correct. Again,
it's correct. It's just correct,
but it is. Yeah. We were like 2:30, something like that. You're right. Yeah. The sun, you know, goes down super early now at this time of the year. Went out for a quick little walk to move some things around. Boom. Created room for dessert. Perfect. It sounds like we both won Thanksgiving. And right now, Todd Helton is winning the Hall of Fame balloting because votes are going out. They're public. If you are a voter for the baseball Writers Association of America, you don't have to publicize your ballot. But of the three that have gone public, Todd Helton has been checkmarked on all three, along with Scott Rowland and Billy Wagner. So long way to go to that 75%, but 3 for 3. That needs to be on his plaque. Todd Helton, 3 for 3. That's just what he did.
How many votes? How many Hall of Fame voters are there in any given year?
In any given year, obviously it fluctuates. I want to say we're near about 450. There's like 700 okay. members of the BBWAA, but then only about like 450 have been around for the decade to be able to actually have that vote. So, you know, you do the math there on whatever that would be, but got to get 75%, and Todd's all off right. to a good start. That's exciting.
Hold on. Am I going to have to do math, or can someone do it for me? How many voters do we need to personally lobby to make this happen?
Oh, it would have to be very much a lot. So 338 would be the exact number. If we had 450 voters, 338 is what we need.
Okay.
To
grease, I think we can do it.
Yes. Very, very doable. I think the Rockies, if we're talking about things that they can do, I think they can bring back Adam Ottavino. Now the Mets are interested in bringing him back. That's the scuttlebutt. I think he's going to have a decent market. He might not be one of the top relievers that are out there, but he's undoubtedly one of the most consistent one. MLB Trade Rumors has him at a 2-year, $14 million deal, whereas the FanGraphs crowdsource has predicted only 1 year, $6 million. I think at 2 years, 14, I don't know that the Rockies would be willing to go 3, or if you'd even need to take 3 years, but 2 years, maybe even, you know, 18 million. So he's making just a little bit less than Daniel Bard. I think that could bring back Adam Ottavino to Colorado.
Yeah. I mean, obviously he's still loved in Colorado. I mean, we saw when he was visiting over the summer. I mean, there was a line of Colorado media waiting to interview him. So, I mean, I think that would be really, it would be great to see for us.
Yeah. For sure. Thomas Harding a couple years ago, you know, came up with his top five list of relievers in Rockies history. And it's, again, an opinion piece, but it's fact. Like no one is taking any of these five names out. Brian Fuentes, obviously being the top. I mean, the award that we give out at the DNVR.com every year for the best relief pitcher is the Brian Fuentes Award. So obviously he's doing something right. 3 All-Star game appearances, most for a Rockies pitcher, has the lowest batting average against in club history, 115 saves and 138 opportunities. You know, Fuentes is quite legendary. No relation to Josh Fuentes or anyone Josh Fuentes is related to. As far as we know,
Josh Fuentes is related to a lot of people in baseball, but not Brian Fuentes.
He is, yes. Although, you know what? You may need to bust out the old genealogy password there and get on that. We got, you know, that's your off-season goal, Susie. Every player in the 40-man roster, just find out who they're related to or who they aren't related to. Get on that as soon as the show's over. We'll finish the show, and then you can start work on this mega project.
Okay, if you insist. Doing the one thing that I love the most, more than anything.
I'll set up the spreadsheet for you so we can get, you know, we'll get the astrology signs in there. I got you.
Actually, if you set up a spreadsheet for me, that would be super helpful.
Okay, done. Done deal.
Start the process for me and I will finish it.
Thomas Harding's top five relievers in Rockies history. Rafael Betancourt, second highest wins above replacement, according to Fangraphs, second only to Brian Fuentes. Started his Rockies career at age 34. Think about that, a 34-year-old relief pitcher coming to Colorado and then posting a 3.53 ERA. His fielding independent pitching is actually even lower than that, lowest in franchise history. Ottavino, third greatest Rockies relief pitcher of all time. Of pitchers with at least 200 relief innings, Ottavino's 10.4 strikeouts per nine tops the list. He's the OG of the sweeper, and he is open and honest. That would be probably the best piece besides what he contributes to the bullpen. It's having those conversations. Mm-hmm. Him and Daniel Bard. Daniel Bard is already really open and honest, especially before games, just hanging out in the dugout. But adding him, I mean, those two guys would be like, I don't know, Waldorf and Statler. Is that their names? From the Muppet Show, the two old guys sitting up in the balcony.
Oh my God, they have names. They're not just the old guys from the Muppets.
Waldorf and Statler? Waldorf is definitely.
I didn't know their names.
Come on, yeah, you got to get on that. Dr. Teeth, are you familiar with these people? Janice?
I know Janice. Everyone knows Janice, please.
Okay, there we go. That's it.
Please.
Dr. Teeth, obviously, an homage to Dr. John. Anyway, an homage. You know what? This show has become an homage to Houston Street. He was on all last
every
week.
Every damn episode.
I had to find a way. This was really why. I was like, I need a reason to talk about Houston Street. Let's talk about the greatest relievers. Oh, yeah, Adam Ottavino. But seriously, no, Houston Street is not a sponsor of our podcast yet.
Yes.
Even though we keep referencing him, his 84 saves ranks third most in club history. Even though his innings pitched is the fewest amongst the top five. So he got in there, got the job done, threw a lot of strikes, didn't get a lot of strikeouts, but did also minimize his walks. 1.8 walks per nine, best in club history. And then the guy, Steve Reed, who also has an award as undervalued, underrated, because he was a guy that doesn't get really talked about that much. Again, hardcore
Rockies. No one talked about Steve Reed.
No. I get hardcores, the diehards, if you will.
The diehards do.
That was not a transition to an ad read. But 461 games pitched, 499 relief innings, club records. I found this interesting. In 1994, this was a strike year. Rockies played, I believe, 144 games. He ended up throwing 64 innings. Check this out. In the last decade, so since 2013, the 2013 season, only 13 Rockies relievers have thrown 64 innings or more. This guy did it in a year in which they canceled like the final month of the season. So,
wow. Yes. Steve Reed. That's a lot for a reliever.
Steve Reed. He's good people.
My arm hurts just thinking about it.
That's it. Yeah. And of course, if we're on that top 13 list, or rather the 13 guys in the last decade who have pitched 64 innings in the last decade, Adam Ottavino appears three times. So again, bringing it back around. Adam Ottavino, bring him back.
It all comes back to Adam Ottavino, and that would be nice if he came back to Colorado.
I think it also all comes back to Brandon Nimmo, because that's
are we
the guy.
Back on him again?
We are back. Seattle is back on him. He's they're checking in on him. They are interested in possibly adding another outfielder. They've also checked in on Andrew Benintendi, another left-handed hitting outfielder. Can't really play center field quite like Brandon Nimmo, but Seattle has a packed outfield. Kelenic in left, J-Rod in center. They just acquired Teoscar Hernandez. They still have Jesse Winker, probably their DH right now. They're shopping him. So look, Trader Jerry DePoto, he's another great Rockies reliever. Let's not forget. Yeah, he was with the Rockies for a while. But DePoto making trades. And I mean, again, Rockies will have to put up a lot of money to try to convince Brandon Nimmo. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. I forget who we were referring to, but almost like, would you rather go back home and play for your hometown team and play and make some nice money? Or is it almost better to play elsewhere and then come back home and be able to relax and maybe not be under the same amount of scrutiny like Mike Trout? I think Mike Trout was the guy that we were talking about, how it seemed like, oh yeah, he's destined to play for the Phillies, you know, for the last half of his career, and not so much. And maybe it's not better so to have that separation, right?
You know, I think it depends on just the guy. And also, I mean, this is like it's like apples and oranges, because going back home for Mike Trout isn't a low pressure environment. It's like the highest pressure environment you could ever possibly imagine. So I think it's a very different situation. Obviously Colorado is a much lower pressure situation.
Yeah, no, fair point. Fair point. They bring the Wyoming kid home. We'll see what happens. Could be one of the reasons why Kyle Phelan.
Depending on which home is home, Colorado, the team he actually grew up liking, or is home Seattle?
Yes. Yeah. Technically, right? Is Wyoming in the Seattle? If you live in Laramie, are you blocked out of Mariners games? Probably. I don't know. That could be one of the things we need to discuss when it comes to MLB learning something from the World Cup.
I am wondering for sure if that's blacked out for Wyoming. That's a valid question.
And will Brandon Nimmo have an hour and a half long commute before and after every game? No, he'll find something. Maybe Broomfield. Maybe that's a little bit more affordable than downtown Denver. No, I think he'll be okay. He can afford.
He'll
those
be fine
rents.
Wherever he ends up. He'll be just fine.
Yes, I like the idea that he'd be renting in Denver, should he sign with the Rockies. I don't know. Maybe you save more money, right? There's actually an equation to figure out if you should buy or you should rent. But look, you're going to save a lot of money today because it's Cyber Monday. Head over to the DNVR.com and DNVRLocker.com. Up to 90% off. We've got shirts for 99 cents, Susie.
That's too good of a deal. I don't know how we're making money off of this. But
in this economy? No, I've legit had family members go, are you guys going out of business? Is everything okay? Like, they're kind of worried. Like, hey, if you need me to float you some cash, I'm like, we're fine. We're just having an awesome sale. We're giving back to our diehards. It's fine.
A couple of my friends, like people who don't even live in Denver, like saw posts about our shirts and like bought merch. So I'm kind of stoked right now.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that kind of support. Yeah, it's great. Yeah, if you are a diehard for only 50 cents for that first month, you know, you get an annual free t-shirt. Now it's every year. It's not just that first year that
every
you sign
year.
Up. Yeah, it's fantastic. Your price breaks on the tailgates when you go to dnvrlocker.com. We got another one for the Broncos coming up here in a little while. 15% off when you're down at the bar, especially if you're watching some of the global chalice. If it's soccer season, we got one more left for Team USA. Absolutely exciting. So head over to the dnvr.com and become a diehard and get some of that diehard only access to our Discord. We finally got our mailbag up and running. Yes. Dropped on Sunday. Rock's inbox, your questions, we got them through the diehard only Discord. That was a lot of fun last week.
I had so much fun. That was actually probably one of my favorite things that we've made for DNVR Rockies. It was fun. It was actually unhinged, a little not safe for work at times. It was hysterical.
It was great. Yeah. Yeah. The DNVR.com. Click Rockies. Boom. You'll see that video there as long as you are a diehard. It's fantastic. And NBA season is fantastic because it is heating up. Still so many unknowns right now. Kemba Walker, firmly in place there with the Mavs. Maybe we'll see. Can he kind of boost them into the postseason? LeBron's back from an injury. Can he get the Lakers to a winning record? And will the Nuggets take the top seed in the West over the Suns in time for their Christmas Day matchup against Phoenix? Look, when I'm looking to bet on the action, I bet with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers right now, you can bet just $5 on the pregame money line of any NBA game. And if your team wins, of course, you win $150 in free bets. If they do, they got the stepped up same game parlays. SGP Lions right here. Loved my same game parlays. It's absolutely a fantastic way to make things a little bit more exciting. More legs you add, also the more you are going to win. Download the app now, sign up with code DNVR and place a pregame moneyline NBA bet. All you got to do is have your team win and you're going to get $150 in free bets with code DNVR only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. World Cup is on the line for the U.S. men's national team on Tuesday at noon. So that's where I'm going with my DraftKings Sportsbook pick of the week. I'm taking Team USA to score exactly two goals, which you can bet on, just how many goals your team is going to score. I do like that, but I'm going a little bit one deeper for them to win their matchup, not just get two and draw, but win the matchup over Iran to advance to the round of 16. So I'm going 2-1 Team USA victory plus 850 as my DraftKings Sportsbook pick of the week.
I love it. I wholeheartedly support it. Yeah, the World Cup has been on at this house the whole darn weeks, which is good because I like knowing what's happening.
Yeah. And but see, the World Cup actually benefits you now on the East Coast because 12 o'clock games
the times
are, like,
are a little better actually on the East Coast.
Yeah, the 6 a.m. games at 8 a.m., like just in time, I'm sure, for the morning feeding of mush and all of the baby stuff. Yeah. We had Gerber House. I don't know. I don't know anything about the baby business.
No Gerber yet.
Not a Gerber House yet. That's okay.
Not yet.
We're working on it. We'll see if we can get them on as a sponsor for Auntie Susie. Gosh. See if we can work on that. But speaking of the World Cup, I got to thinking, Major League Baseball, what can Major League Baseball learn from the World Cup? Obviously, you know, everyone's kind of enraptured at it. It's bringing in billions. I mean, we're probably bordering on a half a trillion, right? So we can even throw the word trillion around in some ways. So baseball has to be looking, saying, okay, what are they doing right? What are they doing wrong? What can we learn from that? And I think that's kind of a good place to start. The thing that I find really interesting about the World Cup, I don't know if you know this, they have a new ball for every tournament. So like they just totally change the ball, you know, so it's like, I mean, it's probably made of similar materials, but it's sort of like the little diamonds or hexagons or pentagons kind of change. And so the ball moves differently. So like all throughout preparing for the World Cup, teams in their practice, they got to figure out how the ball is moving differently. And I imagine it's not a major difference, but you have to calculate for that accordingly.
Interesting. Just like baseballs, how I feel like they're different every year.
A little bit. I would say so. Yeah. And that's sort of what I'm wondering if baseball is thinking about. If I'm sure they've already thought about it. Now, I don't think they want a new design for the baseball. It's still going to look, you know, still have that horseshoe, still have the stitches and everything. You're not going to want to change the color on the stitches, but the composition of the baseball so that maybe it does a little something different each and every year. And there are pros and cons of this. So as you see,
more cons than pros, I feel.
Well,
like,
for baseball players, I think so, because you don't hear the soccer players really complaining that much about it. Maybe that's because, again, they've always been dealing with this. You know, depending on the league that they go in, the ball might move differently. I don't know by how much, but enough that, again, you have to get used to it. And so they just accept that fact and they don't complain as much. In baseball, there's a lot more conversation. There's a lot more complaining about it. And you know, obviously there's been a lot made of like, hey, these players are becoming free agents. So let's have if these are a lot of pitchers that are becoming free agents, let's juice the baseball to bump up those numbers to then tamp down their free agent contracts. So you have to say, well, what's the purpose of this? How nefarious could this manipulation of the composition of the baseball actually be? But from a game standpoint, I think that would be good for the game, in which they use the same baseball for the entire season. And really, it's more about not accumulating all of the best players for a certain baseball type that you're used to, but saying, hey, how quickly can this group of baseball players adjust and adapt to this new baseball that maybe flies a lot further than they expected or is a lot deader than they expected? And we really find out what the best talent is.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, on the flip side, are guys really able to play to their full potential when they're constantly adjusting to changes in the ball? But it does add another layer of chaos. You know, it does make things a little more interesting. But I wonder if you're really going to get the best talent out of everyone if they're constantly trying to relearn how to play baseball a little bit every single season.
Yeah. Yeah. The cream will obviously rise to the top. But like you said, there are those players on the fringes that, hey, I came in the league and the baseball was really beneficial for my style or my abilities, whatever it may be. So again, we're only talking really minor adjustments. It's not like guys need to, you know, change up everything about their stance or their mechanics and whatnot. But you're right. It is enough that there are going to be some guys that might benefit at the start of their career and they build a reputation as being one thing. The ball changes and maybe they don't have it anymore. And then those guys that, hey, I was a pitcher and I just got brutalized. I pitched in a division where there was a lot of guys that launched the ball up really high or teams that adjusted really well. And so it just so happened my ERA was inflated. But I think, again, we understand now with statistics that they aren't what they seem to be. Like, hey, that was the end result. but teams do a good job at evaluating players and say, okay, although the results suggest this guy maybe was below average, there are other things behind it that say, you know what, this player maybe was a little bit unlucky. So I'm not advocating for it, but just sort of saying, you know, that could be really interesting if we had a weird, wacky ball. It doesn't change all the time. It would be the same one for an entire season, mm-hmm. but you really could see teams, coaches, and players who could adjust the best and could make for some interesting discussions, to say the
least. I don't know. I'm just like thinking like, imagine like you finally get used to the ball and the season's over. Like, I'd be so mad.
Yeah. Yeah. And the tackiness of the baseball, like how it feels for pitchers. Again, we know that can be difficult. Don't think that'll happen, but I think it's kind of an interesting conversation. Now, one other thing that the World Cup has that baseball will never have.
Shipping containers that people stay in to watch games.
Exactly. But maybe they need that though, Susie. You bring up a good point. Is not like they should do that, but fan centers, right? They've got these fan villages all around, you know, the stadiums, so that even if you don't get a ticket, you can go and hang out and be a part of that experience. And depending on where you go across MLB, you know, there are tailgates and whatnot. But if you're just having the tailgate in a parking lot, like in Milwaukee, the team in MLB is not necessarily creating that atmosphere. They're not making any money off of it either. And it might not even be safe necessarily, right? So I feel like that's something that MLB could maybe do a better job in. And I think a lot of teams are trying to do that, right? Rockies have McGregor Square now. You know, the Cubs and Wrigley are trying to, you know, develop some things. The Royals and the Truman Sports Complex, if they stay, you know, 8 minutes outside or 8 miles outside of downtown Denver, they've got a little area to go. But really creating this atmosphere that even if you don't have a ticket, come early, come hang out, make it a place to be. So those fan villages that the World Cup has, I think that could be another one of those feathers they could take out of the World Cup's cap and implement in MLB.
Yeah, I guess like when you say a fan village, do you mean like an area for fans to gather and hang out, or like places to stay overnight in terrible accommodations? Because when I hear fan village now, like I just think like literal shacks made out of shipping containers.
No, not a fire fest actual situation like that.
Not a fire fest situation.
Just the vibe of like, hey, this is where we go to hang out. And then afterwards, yes, there's real hotels and there's a La Quinta or Red Roof Inn. Not sponsors yet.
Never. No, they're not. No. La Quinta's? Better hotels, please.
All right. But the rarity of the World Cup is another one of those things. Baseball just simply can't have less of it. Now, the World Baseball Classic is every 4 years. Pandemic kind of screwed up that timeline. Yeah. So that creates that vibe. That's great. But can, you know, I think Major League Baseball, it would be interesting to think about if there were less games. I don't know how many less. Are we talking, let's say, 140? So 70 home games. So you're losing about, 12%, something like that of home games. So now tickets could cost a little bit more. People are maybe a little bit more invested in it because there's going to be more off days. Each game is a little bit more valuable. I don't know that that moves the needle enough. I think that's just something that the World Cup has that Major League Baseball will never have, other than the World Baseball Classic, is rarity.
Well, I think the World Baseball Classic fills that role. Having less games for regular season baseball doesn't really make any sense because everyone's soccer teams still play all the games they play. So I think the World Baseball Classic is already that type of thing. You wouldn't need an adjustment with regular season baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. Advancing with technology, don't stop that. Now, soccer, for a while, they were really reluctant to accept the goal line technology, the VAR, and they finally have it now. And now we can just go and look and go, hey, you did score a goal. We saw the review. Okay, we can credit you with a goal. That's a good thing. Baseball is already doing that. They need to continue to do that, which they are. I'm sure you've seen some of the clips, Susie, of what it looked like in the Arizona Fall League, where a player can go, I think that one was off the plate. You called it a strike. Let's get a replay. And then on the scoreboard, boom, they showed the ball outside of the zone. Again, those kind of things of advancing the technology is going to be beneficial. And I think MLB is on that path to continuing the advancement of technology.
Yeah, they're dipping their toe in it. And I think that is ultimately a good thing because – I mean, when you think about it, when baseball was invented, when it was started, there was no freaking technology at all. And now we have all these amazing tools to know the game better and to know what players are doing even better. So, like, in general, the technology is, I think, a good thing for baseball.
They didn't even have lights to play in the evening. So, yes.
Yeah, exactly. We used to not have electricity. Let's get out of here.
That's right. And they did mess with the baseball because it was previously made out of horse hide. So there's upgrades here that baseball has made in nearly two centuries. What about ambassadors of baseball? So the World Cup in Qatar, they've got David Beckham kind of doing that thing, at least more for the country than for the World Cup. Mm-hmm. And baseball has ambassadors, but they are not players of David Beckham's caliber. We're talking about people on social media, right? Those are the ambassadors that are doing things like our guy that we had on earlier this year. You know, like he's doing those big things. And
Jackson Olsen.
Jackson Olsen, our guy, right? From the former Savannah Banana as well. Savannah Bananas, they're doing a lot of that heavy lifting. And again, that's great. That's good for the game. But MLB has nothing to do with that. They should not be able to take any credit for these social media influencers doing all this work and not only making a name for themselves, but advertising and selling the game of baseball. MLB needs to have bigger names in addition to the social media folks, bigger names getting on board with that and promoting the game.
Well, you know, also a lot of the big names that are former players that are super famous are still working in baseball, but just in like a broadcasting capacity or an analyst capacity. So I feel like they're booked and busy. Like a lot of these like really big names who are great personalities have kind of already found like a niche, found a home doing, you know, like still working in baseball, but just not like an ambassador. But I mean, in a way, if like a former star is, you know, still involved in baseball, is that kind of like a quasi ambassador?
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, Joey Votto, he's getting on TikTok doing his thing. I think players have, again, organically themselves started to advertise for the game, where you're seeing them on social media doing a lot more things. And it would be nice for Major League Baseball to support that a little bit more, or maybe put that more front and center. And I think we might even get there, but they've been slow to kind of adopt those kind of ambassadors. And then security. So this was something I found interesting. At this World Cup, there are, I believe, 20,000 cameras inside the stadium that will monitor the situation amongst fans. And the technology is so good that the cameras can even determine if fans are angry or not. Now,
I hate
this. This would bring a close to MLB Fight Club, but we would have a safer environment for children. Not that it's unsafe to go to baseball games.
It's not unsafe. I would say Qatar probably has all those cameras because they have some crazy laws that they're very strict about. So actually I would argue that those cameras are not for security purposes to keep fans safe. I feel like it's to keep the order that they would like to keep and to make sure people didn't sneak in a beer or something else.
Yes, it makes things secure, not for the fans necessarily, but for the host country. You're right. And again, I don't think baseball would do something like that. But it is interesting to think. I mean, maybe in NFL stadiums, you know, again. Or hey, Dodgers, Giants are playing. Dodgers, Padres. Let's bring in the special cameras to see if we can kind of nip some things in the bud between fans if there's some issue. But you touched on it right there.
If fans running onto the field at Citizens Bank Park in Philly, if that goes away, that is devastating. People risk their lives to run onto the field and get banned for life.
And look, not all
it's a very important tradition.
It's true. It's true. Not all tournaments, you know, bring in a lot of money, are good for the sport, as we know from all the things going on behind the scenes at Qatar and how they built these stadiums on somehow legalized slave labor. It's pretty wild. So
it's bad.
Major League Baseball, they're not getting involved in that. Obviously, that's one thing that they don't need to learn from it because they already know that. They already know you don't do that. But the other thing to learn from it, to not do, do not ban Breck Brew inside the stadiums. MLB has got a major leg up on the World Cup for that reason. So good job. Good job,
Emma. I hate the way that all panned out. And it's still, I don't know. I don't get how people in suites can buy alcohol and like the rest of the fans can't. It's just, it's very fishy to me. There's a lot that I don't like about what's happening in Qatar.
You can get it outside in the fan village, but you can't have it in at your seat. Or even we learned from Jesse Montagna in Finland that you can, when you drink alcohol, you have to do it up on the concourse. You can't even bring it down to your seat. So it's sort of like, you know, in these other countries, again, got to respect their rules and whatnot, but it's very confusing. It's complicated. Where do I go? Where do I drink my alcohol? Well, when it comes to Breck Brew, all you got to do is go to www.breckbrew.com and you can find an Avalanche ale near you. Like, that's the drink this autumn. Susie, is this one of my best transitions ever?
Is this a real transition that's really happening right now? Look,
Breck Brew Avalanche Ale is a real beer that blends pale chocolate and caramel malts all in a well-rounded, flavorful beer. And as I said, you actually know where you can get it. You can have it in your home. You can have it down on the corner of Colfax and York at the DNVR bar. And where do you get it? You will know where to get it at the Breck Beer Locator at www.breckbrew.com. That's it.
Love my Breck Brew. I miss my Breck Brew out here.
Breckbrew.com and find where beer locator. Maybe you need to drive to Asheville. I don't know if you need to make a couple hour drive into Atlanta. I'm sure they've got it somewhere in North Carolina. We'll be following up on that. I'll know the nearest Breck Brew plug that you've got. But if you need a plug, if you need a source to get your chompers looking pearly white, the solution is right here in Denver, 15 minutes, in fact, outside of downtown Denver. It's Green Mountain Dental Group. They want to hook you up with a $300 discount for a full orthodontics treatment for new patients. All you got to do is mention us, DNVR Sports. You can mention Susie and Patrick as well, but DNVR Sports will get the job done for that. They can also hook you up with a free set of bleach trays, a $350 value. I'm due for mine here pretty soon to get them popping. I don't know if it'll be in time for the winter meetings, but for the holidays and for all the pictures and all the cards that we get sending out, boom, it's going to be perfect. They want to hook you up with that with a new patient cleaning, exam, and x-rays.
I got some good news if you're done with your ad reads.
Give me some. I love good news. I'm always ready.
There is Breck Brew out here and very close. They serve it at the World of Beer in Charlotte. They sell it at Whole Foods. They have it at Charlotte Beer Garden. They've got it at all these different beer halls and grocery stores, liquor stores. This is exciting. I'm going to bring some Breck Brew home.
There you go. You can have a little bit of, you can bring in Denver to North Carolina. That's perfect.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm totally going to pick some of these up. This is great.
I love that. Well, it's Monday. So it's minor league Monday.
We're not supposed to do these on actual Mondays, but fine.
I'm ruining the bit. It makes too much sense, Patrick. There's no chaos now. The chaos has been removed. But I'll tell you what, I wrote something. I don't know that it was chaotic, but it's definitely an interesting wrinkle. And again, it is unlocked. It is free and available for anyone. If you're listening to this, you can go. You can share the link. Do what you got to do at thednvr.com. It's basically that Ezekiel Tovar, this time 2 years ago, the beginning of 2021, opening day, he started in the first Fresno Grizzly game as a Rockies affiliate, right? That they were brand new. They previously had the Lancaster Jethawks as their California League team. But Fresno Grizzlies, boom, he's starting at shortstop at 19 years old, gets a hit in the first pitch he sees in low A. I mean, right, there are themes with this young man.
Themes. This man is consistent.
He's got a long way to go to the majors, but he's at low A at 19. And by the end of the next season, he's up in the big leagues. So the question is, who else could possibly make this jump? Who else could go from low A, or who else could go from a 2021 draftee who plays their first full season of baseball in 2022 and then debuts with the Rockies? 9 guys, some of them you may have heard of, only one of them's on the 40-man roster, and some that you might not have heard of. So that's, again, that's free and interesting for you to go and check out. One of the interesting names that I like a lot, left-handed pitcher Evan Shauver. He's a compact lefty. He's still a starting pitcher right now, but 6 foot. He's 6 foot. He's taller than me, but that's considered compact for.
Okay. For so on a scale to 1 to Garrett Hampson, how compact is he?
Maybe a 3. He's not as compact as Mr. Hampson. He's
not going to look as good in the high socks and the green pants.
He might. The cutoff might be 6 feet even. We'll have to see where that range is for looking good in a compact fashion. But yeah. He's the top candidate right now to be Lucas Gilbreth 2.0, a guy who's a starting pitcher. And then the next time we see him in a game as a pro, he's relieving games for the Rockies in the bullpen. So that could be the case for him in 2023. The other name is known. He's not in the 40-man yet. Hunter Goodman, catcher, first baseman, DH, 36 home runs across three levels in 2022. I sort of think that if the minor league season were a little bit longer, maybe started a little bit earlier, we might have even seen Hunter Goodman, you know, playing for the Rockies, the way he was able to go from low A to then high A, not skipping a beat, and then still hitting two home runs in 12 games with, of course, the Hartford Yard Goats. So Hunter Goodman, definitely a name to watch.
The Goats. Yeah, we definitely need to keep an eye on Hunter Goodman for sure.
Yeah, his defense, you know, I don't think he's necessarily going to stick as a catcher. Maybe that Tom Murphy mold where Murphy, you know, still doing his thing as a catcher with the Mariners. First base, maybe. There's a lot of candidates there. Could he move to the corner outfield spot? We'll learn a lot this spring, but Goodman can hit, no two ways about it. Look, we talked about the Savannah Bananas before. They are coming to Fresno and Hartford this year. Not Albuquerque.
So the Savannah Bananas brand and the Hartford Yard Goats brand, just like the two of them collabing in any capacity makes so much sense, because the Savannah Bananas are very chaotic and fun. The Yard Goats are very chaotic and fun. I'm so excited to see how Hartford rolls out the red carpet for the Bananas.
Limited edition banana flavored Dunkin' Donuts at Dunkin' Donuts Park. Like, they're going to do everything.
Probably do something weird like that. Yeah.
You know it. It'd be deliciously weird, of course.
Delicious, but weird.
That's going to be fantastic.
You don't get like custom donuts from Dunkin' Donuts, though. It's like they do other things with the donuts. So, like, maybe some kind of like sandwich that has like ice cream and like banana slices on it or something.
Like the Elvis shake, almost like, but
kind of like the Elvis shake, but in the form of a donut sandwich.
Yeah, no, that's going to be fun. Yeah, they're doing a world tour, Savannah Bananas. It's only in the U.S., but regardless, it's a world tour. It actually starts down in spring training. So if you're there, they got a game at Scottsdale Stadium on March 31st, then April 1st, Peoria, Arizona. They're coming to Kansas City in May, Las Vegas, Oklahoma City, Tulsa also in May. In July, San Jose, Fresno, and Sacramento at the end of the month, kind of doing a California loop. And then August is when they're going to be in Hartford on August 14th at Dunkin' Donuts Park. They're also going to be in Des Moines. Des Moines is kind of doable. I forget how many hours that is exactly. It could be 10.
Man, I want to try to get out to Hartford. That would be so much fun.
Yeah, that'll be cool. Maybe our guy Jackson he'll re-up. He'll be signed for another year. That could be good.
I have a feeling we will see, unless Jackson also is doing something much bigger than Savannah Bananas, I feel like we will see him play in Hartford as a banana. Like he has to.
Riding his Peloton. I know that's what he's doing recently. He's riding his Peloton.
Oh my gosh.
Pioneer League schedule has also been revealed. Now again, Pioneer League not affiliated, not an affiliate team with Major League Baseball, but they are a partner league. May 23rd is their opening day, and the Northern Colorado Owls are set to be home on opening day on May 23rd against the Rocky Mountain Vibes. The question is, will that new ballpark in Windsor be done? They've put a lot of money into that project, and each time I drive by every couple of months, I get more and more worried. You know, they had to play elsewhere in 2022. We'll see if it's ready by opening day. I don't think it'll be as bad as the Yard Goat situation.
That was a terrible situation. And whenever I think about a stadium not being ready on time and like driving past it and looking and like knowing in your gut, hey, that doesn't look like it's going to be ready by the time it needs to be ready. Like, listen to that gut feeling, Patrick. Like, you might be right, and I hope you're not, though, but you might be.
Yeah, I'm due for another drive-by there. I mean, the weather's still nice enough. Obviously, you can still work in this, and those construction workers, they make some magic happen even in really crummy weathers. But June 6th is also the first ever game on the Western Slope for the Grand Junction Jackalopes.
They will always be the Grand Junction humpback chubs to me.
There you go. They will always be Casper ghosts to me. So that's, it's interesting how that works. I'd be interested in maybe picking up a shirt or something like that. I do like the nickname Jax, like the GJ Jax.
That's cute and it's snappy. It's fun. Snappy is important.
Snappy would be the word to describe it. We were talking about the World Baseball Classic before. The teams are going to actually play some games against big league clubs. I mean, again, it's an exhibition game, so what does it matter? Team USA, Team USA on March 8th down in Arizona in the Cactus League. They're going to be playing the Giants at Scottsdale Stadium. Team Canada is going to be in Mesa against the Cubs. All of these are on March 8th, getting ready for the start of the World Baseball Classic. Great Britain is going
to
be...
Team Great Britain. Can't wait to see what they have to offer.
Yeah, that's it. Crumpets. Lot of crumpets. They're playing Milwaukee and Maryvale. Columbia, also in Mesa, at Oakland Athletics, where they train at Hohokam Park. And then Team Mexico in Goodyear against the Guardians. Team Mexico is actually going to be playing the Rockies at Salt River Fields on Thursday, March 9th. So that will be super fun. Cool. I'm pumped for Vinny Castilla because he's an ambassador for both those teams, and that will be a cool environment for sure on March 9th.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We need to really plan our spring training schedule around making it to that game. Have to.
Yep. Team USA will be down the road in Tempe. At where the Angels play there, Diablo, Tempe Diablo Stadium. Have you ever seen that? You ever gone to a spring training game there?
I have.
I kind of like the park.
I like it.
Yeah, it feels old school, but the buttes out in left field is pretty neat. We'll have to do that as we get closer to spring training. Rate your spring training facilities. How many have you been to? Do you know?
I think I've been to all of them.
In Arizona or
in Arizona? In Arizona, I have never been to Florida spring training.
Oh, you're in drivable distance. That's it.
Well, it's funny. My mom lives in Clearwater now, so she's actually really close to where the Phillies play. She's close to where the Blue Jays play. So it's I'm gonna have to make an appearance out there during this upcoming spring training, definitely. But yeah.
Yep. Yeah, Bradenton, just south of that. This is all on the Gulf side, on the west coast of Florida. You got Bradenton, where the Pirates are at, right there.
Yeah,
Sarasota is in that area with the Orioles. You got Fort Myers. So yeah, there's a lot going on, but nothing is like Arizona because they're all right there.
Arizona's so much better. It just has to be because you can actually go to every stadium in a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah, the two farthest ones are 45 minutes. I mean, there's only a couple in Florida that you can even say that about. A couple. Mm-hmm. It's pretty wild. Also, final thing, World Baseball Classic first. I don't know if you saw this one, Susie. Stephen Kwan and Lars Nootbaar will be playing for Team Japan. This is the first time players born outside of Japan will be playing for Team Japan in the World Baseball Classic and probably for any tournament. That's pretty cool.
This is really cool. Oh, yeah, here. What's up?
Sorry, guys. I had something else going on. I do want to chime in real quick on the World Cup, yes, and the Baseball Classic. The reason the World Cup is so popular is because it's ingrained with history. So if the way that MLB, because this is going to fall on the MLB's lap for them to grow the Baseball Classic, is to grow the game of baseball outside the U.S. And that's the only, because you need to get a passion. If you look back at the 2014 World Cup, it was a full party atmosphere because people were into it. They're crying, they're laughing. You're all the way in. And that's kind of what MLB has to do. It has to ingrain that passion and that country love into each of their players and each of their fan bases in order for this thing to grow like it should. So in order for any world competition right now for it to grow, there needs to be some sort of passion behind it.
Well, I think that's it. As you just said, MLB, frankly, it really isn't a world game. It's played around the world, but I don't think the world welcomes baseball like soccer. I mean, that's the world sport. And so the World Baseball Classic, what's actually going on kind of behind the scenes before we see all the big leaguers representing all these countries, is they're playing tournaments in Italy and different places to get some of these smaller countries, Israel, Great Britain, you know what I mean? They're playing baseball in Great Britain. Now they are a little bit. Right. And so you've got to do that. And that's going to take a long time. As you to your point, you hear, there isn't that history of people playing baseball in Great Britain and all those things. So as much money as the U.S. has and invests in Major League Baseball, World Cup has the world. Everyone stops what they're doing for the World Cup around the world. That's global dollars, not just U.S. and North American dollars. Mm-hmm. And that's the piece that MLB would love to have. That's why you're seeing some of these international games in London, possibly in Paris coming up too. So they're on the path. They got a way to go.
And basketball has done a great job of building that culture around basketball. And that's why you see the Olympics and the FIBA World Cup become way bigger, because they build that passion behind that sport. If you guys saw the Serbia doc, a shameless plug, you can really tell they focus on the Euros, they focus on the World Cup a lot, because that's what matters to them as a country. And that's the kind of thing that baseball has to do. They have to ingrain that passion into their fans around the world. And Otani being a great baseball player is going to help Japan become grow even stronger. You have Germán Márquez become a great and Jose Altuve become great. It's going to help the southern countries become even more intense and more into it. So I think if you give it about 20 years, baseball can get to a place where it can start actually stopping the world and actually start growing the game more internationally. Yeah.
Well, when I like talk to my dad was born in Poland, like lived in Poland until he was a teenager, but they would like play baseball in gym class, but like not really, because the gym teacher didn't really know how baseball works. So it kind of be like this baseball cricket hybrid. So there's there's a lot to be done internationally in terms of making sure people actually know how to play it. That's like the huge first step right there.
Yeah. And again, what Patrick is saying about Japan having non-Japanese born players on their team, that's something that's really popular in soccer. So you have the U.S. that has two of their best players, and Musa, and I think it's, I want to say A-Rob, are both from England. They were born and raised in England. They lived their whole lives in England. But because their parents are American, they're able to play for their American team. And that's how you build a squad, and that's why the U.S. is becoming a soccer country little by little, because you're getting the best players, you're putting them on your squad, and you have somebody to cheer for, and you're not going to look into their history and see how long they've been American. You don't care. You want to win. And that what Japan is doing, I think, is what other countries have to start doing. There's so much American talent that they have ancestors from Nigeria, they have ancestors from Mexico, they have ancestors from South America, that you can put them on all these other teams around the world, and it's going to make the competition a lot stronger, and it's going to make it funner for everybody to watch.
Yeah, it's definitely exciting to see players who were not born in Japan but have Japanese roots being a part of this team, because there's so much baseball talent in Japan. That's the other thing. So, I mean, it's cool for us as Americans to have some of our stars over there.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fantastic that exists too. And as you're saying, you hear, basically, if you have grandparents that are of a certain come from a certain nation, you could participate. Like Elias Diaz was, you know, he's born in Venezuela, but now I'm forgetting what country that one of his grandparents is from. But he's like, and if they don't want me over in Venezuela, boom, I can go and represent this other country. And again, this is the start of it, and that's a good thing. That's building the game. And it's funny you brought up Otani, because he actually recruited Stephen Kwan when Cleveland and the Angels played against each other. He's like, you know, Steve, come on, I want you to play for us. You know what I mean? And so Lars Nootbaar, not born in Japan, his brother was Nigel Nootbaar. Come on, how great is that name?
I love this family of names. I mean,
it's such a weird.
Nigel Nootbaar. Yeah. Their father is Dutch. Their mother is Japanese, and his brother Nigel was actually born in Japan. Was a minor leaguer with the Orioles several years back. So yeah, I think this is good. Kind of just trying to get the big names. That's the other piece too, right? Obviously, the best players are going to play in the World Cup, and I don't know that it's always true that the best players are in the World Baseball Classic. They're trying to do a better job. It's pretty good. I think most of the best players are, but you want the best players definitively playing and almost, you know, just dying to represent the country.
Yeah,
I don't think you see that with relief pitchers and pitchers right now. That's just a baseball issue. But in general, they're getting there.
I also think they just need more international competitions. Like, they need a North American Cup, they need a South American Cup, they need a European Cup, and they need an Asian Cup, kind of like the World Cup does. They need an African Cup, because that grows the passion localized. You localize it, and you can get behind your team more and more. And that's something soccer is really good at. They localize the passion and then they can expand it little by little. And I think that's all baseball needs, because it has, I think it has the best foundation out of any sport that's out of soccer to go international and become a world passion.
Yeah, the World Series is not a true World Series.
World, our yeah. world.
Yeah, I put that in the notes as a thing I glossed over, but it would be pretty neat. Again, I think we think we know the results, but again, this is why you play the game. But what if you did have a series with the team that wins the World Series, or maybe even if you got to the AL or NL Championship Series? So again, you can do it tournament style. So the top four teams in MLB against NPB in Japan, or the KBO in South Korea. Throw in maybe the AAA champion. Again, there's all kinds of logistics involved in that, because those you could have, like, you know, the Yankees in the ALCS and then their AAA affiliate in Scranton-Wilkes-Barre also being in AAA. I don't know how that works. The Mexican League, Taiwan, the CPBL, like, that would be great if you had something like that. It's another kind of tournament. You're right. That would definitely broaden the spectrum of things.
Yeah, and I think that's all. I think that's all we need. We need to broaden where the net's going, because baseball is a big sport in Mexico, huge. Like, you go out there and people are just as passionate as they are about the Yankees for their home squad. But the biggest thing is that there's no exposure. You know what I mean? There's nothing there to grow it. There's no infrastructure. If the Rockies, if let's say some of the richest clubs like the Dodgers or the Yankees put a farm system down there, it's going to grow, and it's going to grow quickly because people love the sport and they're going to get so much more Mexican talent. And that's what the MLB has to start doing, because the NBA has camps all over the world to help grow the talent, and the MLB needs to start putting camps all over the world to start growing talent and start growing that international pool.
Do you think a hindrance in growing this international pool is that you kind of need, like, a few more things to play baseball? Like, you need a ball, you need a bat, you need a glove. Like, with soccer, I mean, you could roll up, like, a big bunch of paper and use that as a ball. But, like, I mean, it's got to be tough for kids who don't have the gear to play baseball to even start the process of learning it.
I would agree with that if there wasn't alternatives, because in Mexico, I remember my dad telling me that they used to play baseball in the streets with a broomstick and the lid of a can. And that's all they played with. Like, and they would still go out there. First base.
They would still do it.
Yeah, and it's first base is a shoe. So that's why these camps are there for. Like, the camps are there for to give these kids that equipment they need, to give them the structure and show them how the game is actually played. A game they're already playing out in the streets, trying to see how it works because they actually love it. So it all starts from a passion. It all starts from passion, which the passion is there. There's just not the infrastructure to grow the passion and grow the people around it.
There's actually a product. I forget what it was called, but I looked into this, maybe purchasing one, where it's like a branded stick and then, like, these green bottle caps. Like, oh, we'll give you 200 bottle caps. Because, like, again, that's how it might be played in other countries, right? That form. We've got wiffle ball, too. Like, again, that's much cheaper, much more affordable to be able to utilize. There's also a game I can remember seeing at one point that I think MLB was trying to roll out, which would be great for playgrounds here in America and all over the world, where it was almost like a handball version of baseball, where a kid, you know, is just holding the ball and they use their hand to hit it. And I think they, you know, like, run to the bases. And so, again, you're teaching the fundamentals of, oh, okay, I'm hitting the ball. I'm here. I know where to throw it. And again, it can be played on playgrounds. And there's no, like, I'm pitching to you. Well, you're not even throwing me a strike, so I can't hit it. Again, there's all those things. I want to see more winter leagues on the MLB network. I want to see maybe MLB kind of getting involved. I'm sure the winter leagues themselves would probably, you know, they like their autonomy that they have. But can we see more of that baseball in the winter time when it's cold out and we don't have it here in America? Let's play that up. Let's have more of that.
I like that.
Yep. Yeah. And that's literally what it is. It's just it's going to fall on the shoulders, on the lap of MLB to take care of this, because no other place in the world has the money or has the infrastructure to create this except for the MLB. So it falls on America to do this, because nobody else is going to do it.
And shoot, if the Venezuelan Winter League or the Dominican Winter League, all those, if they don't want to maybe do business with MLB, and again, I would understand, because again, they've got their autonomy and everything's working great for them. They're fine. Okay. MLB is thinking a little bit more broader and whatnot. Then go and start your own winter league. Go somewhere. I don't know exactly where you would go necessarily. Australia, they already have their own winter league. That seems like it checks off enough of the boxes with the weather. But there could very well be places. I mean, oh, Costa Rica. Costa Rica has a lot of really good tourism. Mm-hmm. That could be a place that you go and maybe you establish one or two stadiums, maybe even just one. Maybe there's just, you know, six teams. So you have three games every single day, all throughout the day. Whether you're in San Jose or one of another major, you know, city in Costa Rica. And that's where people go. That's where on the MLB network, you can watch this. And it's a very safe and it's a place that MLB can kind of, you know, keep a watchful eye over. You could do it maybe in some places in Europe as well. Like that is how you, as you said, you hear, spread it out to the rest of the world. And it will take time, but baseball is almost still a little bit too slow, it seems like, to advance in those kind of ways internationally.
Do you think that, oh my God, who, the Venezuelan league, was it Asdrubal Cabrera who punched that guy in the face?
Yeah.
do you think that will lead to maybe more coverage of these winter leagues? Like, oh, you don't know what's going to happen.
I almost think that MLB is like afraid of like, oh no, we want to show how, like how wild it is. Like, we don't want to promote that. Like baseball's old school in that way. I mean, it was only a couple years ago that Tim Anderson had a bat flip and the entire Kansas City Royals were, you know, up in arms throwing at him. Right. And now it's a lot more common, but it was like, hey, that's not how you play the game. You don't swing on 3-0, all those other things. And so it's a little bit too buttoned up. It's a little too stuffy. That I think like, oh, we don't want kids to see this kind of behavior. It's passion. Like they're seeing it already. That's okay. Yeah. That passion in the winter leagues is absolutely fine. So I'd welcome that. I'd love to see, you know, more coverage of that. I think even if it was in Spanish still, that's fine. I'd still be watching those kind of games. So there's still a lot of potential to baseball. First just needs to make it more of a world sport. And then we can discuss about having a tournament that is a little bit more like the World Cup.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue with the U.S. is they're afraid that other leagues around the world is going to take their number one spot. But they don't realize that if you create other leagues around the world, they're just going to funnel talent to your league, just like the Premier League has done.
Oh, that's a really good point, too.
I'm glad you brought that up. So that was another thing that I didn't want to get too in depth with, but... You brought it up, so this is perfect. The Champions League is something that you go, well, let's get the best teams in Europe. And it's all the major names that you know, Real Madrid, Barcelona. You like how I pronounce that? Sorry, I couldn't resist saying Barcelona. Chelsea, Man United, et cetera, right? They got all those teams. But there are the smaller clubs that come from Iceland or Wales, Denmark, Macedonia, like – they get to qualify and they benefit from that as well. Same thing in the Premier League, where if you get promoted, right, and then you get relegated the next year, you're like, oh shoot, we were only against the big dogs for 1 year and we spent all this money on players. Now we're in a deficit. They've got these balloon payments to say, hey, no, if you come up, you know, to the big leagues, right, to the Premier League, you're still going to get these financial payments. So we're going to help you all out. It's really what the revenue sharing is like in these leagues, is that the New York Knicks can make all the money in the world in Madison Square Garden. But if they don't have a team in Phoenix or in San Antonio in a smaller city like that to play against, they don't have anybody to come out to their building. So they need to help subsidize that just a little bit. So I think baseball needs to help subsidize some of these other leagues and minor league baseball a little bit more so to help build things up from underneath. No one's going to take MLB away from MLB. It's still going to be the premier place, but they can build everything else underneath to help build them up even higher.
And I think that's where they're afraid that if they build everything underneath them, everything's going to get taken away from them. And that's something that leagues around the world have problems with, and even in soccer, that they're afraid of building their infrastructure below because they feel like they're going to get overtaken because things change so quickly. But the thing is, once you're the premier place to go, like the MLB, and you have had no real competition for the last 100 years, there's no reason to be afraid anymore. That time already passed. You're no longer spring chicken. You're not going to get eaten. You're good to go. Like, you're going to live out a full life at that point.
Very true. Spring chicken. You're enjoying the spring chicken reference. I love that. That's perfect.
All right. Sorry, I apologize for derailing you guys. I'll let you guys continue.
Derailing. We're on topic. This is great. No, I mean, I sort of want to just like snippet the first part of the conversation with you. Here's part of the conversation. I mean, that's baseball and soccer kind of in a nutshell, what they can learn from one another.
What they can learn from each other.
Yeah. It's fascinating. Yeah. And if we're talking about expansion, I don't think MLB will ever expand into Qatar. So we're safe. We don't even need to bother explaining that. Also, the temperature, the English national team, they were dying and it was 81 degrees. And they're like, oh, man, it's so hot. This is their winter time, folks. So it's like, that's not going to
happen. Meanwhile, like, yeah, no, so many like 100 degree days at Coors Field this year. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, the weather this year was great for a while. And then, yeah, by the end of September, it was like, I can't wait for fall to get here. And then I immediately regretted that come November 1st when it got to be a little too cold. But
yeah, it got real cold real fast. Real cold did. Real fast. I can't believe we've been talking for more than an hour in this off-season baseball podcast.
Look, we're good at what we do. We've got a lot to talk about. We've got so much more. We only got to half the things I wanted to talk about.
Which is actually quite scary. If you guys saw the outlines Patrick puts together these days of the week. Oh my gosh.
Look, you got to be ready for any situation. Let's like, I you know, help organize these outlines and run the podcast like Bud Black. I'm like, all right, hey, look, our starter, we got to take him out here in the second inning. What's the game plan? All right, hey, he's got a shutout going deep into the eighth. All right, here's the guy I'm going to in the pen. You got to be ready to pivot. With anything, I got to know who's on my bench, who's available, what topics we can discuss. It's great. And we do it 5 days a week, 11 a.m. on the YouTube channel, Monday through Thursday. Susie, every Friday. What's special time this week again, right?
Mark your calendar because the Denver Nuggets messed up my schedule again. So my show will be at 3 p.m. Mountain Time.
There we go.
So a very early happy hour.
That's exciting. Yeah, we've got a few more days until the winter meetings. It'll be exciting to see what goes down with that. If the Rockies, how aggressive they are, how are the other teams in the NL West, how they behave. We'll be talking with Bill Schmidt in his private suite. That's how we do things there. It's interesting. Yes.
Fancy.
No steak dinners or anything. Just hey, come sit down, set up your microphone. Pepper me with questions, but it can be very insightful. You can get maybe a fraction of that insight at DNVR_Rockies or at Patrick D. Lyons. That's where I'm at on Twitter.
And you know, you can find me at the Susie Hunter on all platforms.
Even Mastodon?
Oh my gosh, actually not yet, but I am on Be Real.
Oh, okay. Have you started officially or you just signed up?
Oh no, I post on Be Real most days.
Nice. Mm-hmm. All right.
It's fun. I like it. I like it. I'm into it. I get the concept and I like the concept.
There you go. We got to follow. At least if you happen to squat on the Susie Hunter on Mastodon, just be nice and just give it to her.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to have to go sign up now.
You got to. And then also start work on the genealogy of everybody on the 40-man roster. Look, it's going to be a busy offseason as always. And it's going to be a fun one. But despite the momentum we've built up just now, you know what they say about momentum?
What do they say?
It's only as good as your next show. So we'll talk to you tomorrow at 11.